irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Razor Riffs with Keith Razor and Alan Lee, right here on LA Talk Radio.
All right, showtime.
All right, another Tuesday night here at LA Radio.
Oh, Alan, talk again.
Another wonderful Tuesday night at LA
Radio.
Okay.
Am I on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're on now. That's mic four.
Well, thank you. Thank you for including me in the show.
happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
Happy Thanksgiving. I know everyone out there had turkey and other things to eat.
Yeah, my Thanksgiving was pretty cool. My grandmother came in.
Oh.
And you know my grandma, she's like nuts, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But she suffers from this thing called Alzheimer's, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a very serious disease. Very,
I think it is.
Very serious disease. It's not funny to joke about Alzheimer's. Basically, you forget stuff.
Yeah.
And I was shopping with my grandmother, right, for Thanksgiving dinner. And, you know, we were just walking down the aisles. And I was like, hey, Grandma. And she looks at me, and I just pointed to a dude. I was like, hey, that's your grandson, Timmy. And she goes up to him, and she's like, oh, Timmy, happy Thanksgiving. And Timmy's like, I don't even know who you are, you know. And then she turns to me, and she's like, Keith, he didn't recognize me. I was like, yeah, I think he has Alzheimer's.
You said you were not going to make fun of it.
I wasn't making fun of it. I'm just saying that's funny.
That's funny.
Then we saw movies and stuff. I took her to see Creed and The Martian and Frankenstein.
All and, three like that?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I told her all three of the movies were named Creed. So when she came home for Thanksgiving dinner, you know, she's explaining The Martian to my mom. She's like, oh my God, it was such a great movie. Matt Damon was in it, and he was on Mars, and he got stuck, and it was, oh my God. And my mom's like, what's it called? And she's like, Creed.
Now, see, that's the thing about Thanksgiving. We all do play jokes on each other and get into these huge arguments.
Well, no, my grandmother's kind of nuts, you know.
Mm.
Is it just me, or is it like...
What's that?
Is my throat, like... I don't know.
You sound very clear.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's the Keith Razor we all know and love.
Oh, maybe I think I drank too much NyQuil or something.
Oh, I didn't realize you were on NyQuil tonight. I remember one time I had a little NyQuil and you thought that I'd had something else.
it's a rough life, Alan, I'll tell you.
We chose this road.
We did? Hmm. I chose stand-up comedy. You wanted to do the podcast. I was just like, whatever.
It's still a road.
Yeah.
The road.
Well, what happened last week? Last week was awesome. It was an excellent show.
We had a great show.
We had Jeff Richards, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Richards, that was a great show.
It was a lot of fun.
That was my favorite show. I got a tweet, you know, and they're like, hey, was that really your favorite show? And I was like, yeah. I wouldn't have said it if it wasn't my favorite show. And tonight I think is going to be a great show because we have Steve Trevino.
We're both familiar with Steve Trevino.
Yeah. Steve's an excellent comedian. He has two stand-up specials, one called Grandpa Joe's Son and the other called Relatable, which is on Netflix. I watched Relatable. It was, I'm not just saying this, but it was one of the funniest specials I've ever seen.
It was indeed.
And, you know what it is? Because, like, it was so... The humor was just so relatable. Like, I don't have a wife and a kid, you know, but it related to me, you know?
I'm sorry if you don't mind me asking. In what way?
Well, because, like, the wife jokes, you know?
Yeah.
It related to me because my mom's crazy.
Oh, I see. I had a moment to connect that.
Yeah.
You're
and,
right.
You know... I've dated some crazy ladies.
Yeah, you've told me in the car a number of times.
And
so you're texting furiously.
And my grandmother's crazy. So I have experience with
crazy.
But
you're not, though. You're not crazy.
No. I once went out with Amanda Bynes. That was nuts. She was I never told you that?
No, I don't think. Amanda, refresh my memory because I don't recall that.
Amanda Bynes. I mean, it wasn't really... Whatever.
It wasn't really one of your... Real Loves, or of the many loves of Keith Reza? That sounds like a show.
Keith Reza. All my loves have been, three lap dances in a row.
Oh. That's sad.
No, it's not sad. Man, it wasn't really a coffee thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But she was crazy. She was totally like.
Well, they were out there.
Because the thing is, she was a celebrity, or is a celebrity, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And some dude took her picture.
Yeah, yeah.
She just went nuts. She's like, can't take my picture. Give me your phone. And she took his phone and she threw it on the ground. And I was like, oh.
But fame is not. She doesn't like her picture taken. I mean,
no,
the attention.
She's crazy. Oh. Like, really crazy. Oh. So I had to get out of there. Mm-hmm, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well.
I was like, I'm done, you know? Actually, she said it was done with me. But anyways, the point is I had to run.
It's not like your
Gary Busey story where, you're in a movie with him and he's like, hey, Alan, I was in a movie with you.
Yeah, I know. We had a hard time that day. It was like you said, Alzheimer's. He couldn't remember.
Alzheimer's. It's a funny word, Alzheimer's. But I did get good news. I might get on that Dana Carvey show with my impressions.
I just helped. We did a shoot. We did a shoot out there in the hills.
Yeah, you just helped me do.
The lighting was a little off, but we didn't have enough time to set the lights.
Well, it's kind of hard because I don't have a professional camera.
That's true.
So, I like to film stuff on my cellular phone.
Well, the light was what we call natural light because. We were over there at McDonald's.
Yeah.
And
McDonald's has the best coffee. Have you ever noticed that? It's like Starbucks says they have the best coffee, but McDonald's is actually better and it's cheaper.
I think it's not as pricey. I enjoy it. I've never had any problems with it.
There's a lot of homeless people at McDonald's. Maybe that's why it's good.
Well, it could be, but again, I'm not the one to judge the homeless for their taste in coffee. You and I don't care. We just drink whatever.
Wait, don't care about the homeless or care about
the coffee? No, we don't care about the coffee. I mean, I know you
I care
I've seen
about
you
the
care
homeless.
About, yeah, many times. I've seen you dig in your wallet and pull out a couple of shekels.
One time, I accidentally gave a homeless guy a $100 bill.
Oh.
It was the worst day of my life.
That was kind of generous.
Because very generous. I think it was around Christmas time or something. I don't know why I was so generous that day. Because I'm not a generous person.
Well, Christmas could do that to you.
You know? Because I'm an angry person. You know what I mean? I'm full of hate, you know?
I don't want people to get that impression of you.
Yeah, because they only know me for an hour. But I'm very hateful. Like, I say mean things to every... Like, I told my dad... Like, my dad the other day, I was having a conversation with my dad. I was like, hey, Dad... stuff like that, and he's like, "Ooh," and he went to his room because he was scared of my hate. Anyways, the point is, I saw a homeless guy once, and I gave him a bill. I thought it was a $1 bill, and then when I got home, I realized I gave him a $100 bill, and I was like,
"Well, didn't you sort of say, well, that was fate, karma?"
No, it was good karma, but I remember when I did it, my mom was like, because my mom was with me, and she's like, oh, he's just going to spend that on booze and drugs, you know? And I was
which is pretty normal for you, right?
Yeah.
I'm just joking.
Oh, no. And I was like, I don't do booze.
For the people out there, I'm just joking.
I don't do booze or drugs.
You can look at Keith's picture and know that that's not the case. Really, no.
Everyone thinks I do. It's facetious. I don't know why, but whatever. Anyways, the point is, so my mom's like, the homeless guy's just going to spend on booze and drugs. I was like, oh, it's better than giving it to Dad, you know? He's going to spend it on prostitution.
Oh. I don't know. I thought your dad is such a nice man. He's such a sweet man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in fact, I remember that your dad got you a podcast kit. Remember? And I came over and we were trying to put it together.
And we couldn't figure it out.
It was weird. It was like an erector set.
We had to do this podcast. All right. I've had enough of you. Are you ready to call the man of the hour?
I certainly am.
All right. Steve Trevino is one of the funniest guys in the world, and he's being cool, and we're calling him right now. Connecting. Maybe we should have done a test.
Well, I'm only here to...
Oh, it's ringing.
Hello, Steve.
Hey, Steve, it's Keith.
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Good, man. Thanks for doing the podcast.
Yes, thanks a lot, Steve. You're on with us, and thank you for being with us tonight.
Steve, this is Alan Lee, my trusty sidekick. Alan Lee, this is Steve.
Thank you.
How are you, fellow?
How are you, Steve? And, you know, I realize that we're both from Texas. I just wanted to throw that in there immediately.
We're all
oh, wow,
Texas.
Dude. Where are you from, man? What part?
Houston. Houston, Texas. Or Houston.
Oh, see, you know hot and humid.
Oh, God. You know, it's like I do most of my comedy in some of the saunas here, and it always reminds me of home.
Oh, dude, believe me, the people in California complain when it's 90 degrees. I'm like, okay, you don't know 98 degrees and humidity 100%.
Thank you.
It's actually really cold out in California right now.
It's cool. It's a little colder than...
Well, Keith is funny. I mean, he's probably saying it's cold and it's, what, 65?
Yeah.
It might be. I didn't really check.
It's not that cold.
No, it's pretty cold. I had to wear a jacket, a vest, and
a
sweater.
Oh, dear. Oh, my God.
But, but no, I'm from Texas, too. I'm from San Antonio.
So. Yeah, that's right. You are.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, I was born in San Antonio, Texas. Oh. So.
Very good. And then your dad moved you guys out to Orange County, huh?
Yeah, my mom decided to move to California to meet my dad, and that's how it worked. So,
it all went down.
Yeah, it was cool. But so Alan, a little about Steve. Mm-hmm. I've been a huge fan of Steve's stand-up forever, you know, and I actually got to do the autism awareness show with him.
Okay,
not last year, but the year before.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And he was the headliner, mm-hmm. and it was awesome because I've always wanted to work with Steve.
Fantastic.
And I actually got on the show mm-hmm. because I'm autistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't ask for it. You know, they just put me on it. Mm-hmm. And then I remember I went to go do a radio interview with Steve. And I made Steve – I don't know if I made you feel uncomfortable, but I just realized maybe I'd drawn myself. I was like, so, Steve, can I open up for you at the Improv?
That's a good
question. No, but you know what, I'll be honest with you, man. A lot of comics don't ask, you know, and it's one of those deals where it's like, you got to ask. I mean,
thank you.
You never know who's going to say yes. And, you know, I really enjoyed working with you at the autism benefit. So after that, we ended up getting to work together at the Irvine Improv.
Yeah, we also did Brea together, too.
Yeah, no, it was great. And it's one of those deals where it's like, if you didn't ask, I probably wouldn't have asked you, and not because I don't think you're funny, but it's because, you know, we all move about our lives, and and that's how I got on the road. I asked a lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I remember on the Autism Awareness Show, I asked you to watch my set, and you took time. You know, I only got a 5-minute spot because I wasn't technically on the show, but Steve actually watched the full 5 minutes, and then he's like, you're a great writer. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. You know what I mean? Like, when a headliner says that to you and you're struggling, that gives you a pat on the back.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm a huge fan of stand-up comedy and the process of stand-up comedy, the, you know, the writing, the different styles, the different perspectives. I mean, I'm such a fan of stand-up comedy that, you know, when somebody young says, hey, check me out, I usually do, and I also want to help, and I also want to, you know, if I have a tag for them or if I have maybe some advice on how to make their set better, I usually try to put it out there for them and, you know, take it or leave it. Sometimes I guess people inside are like, well, screw Steve. Like, who does he think he is to tell me, you know, whatever. But, I mean, I love stand-up so much that I always want to talk about stand-up or you know, and that's the thing about the guys that I take on the road. If we're driving somewhere, our conversations pretty much are about stand-up, you know?
Yeah. And the thing is, I saw a video of you when you were a kid. You did stand-up. And I wanted to talk
about it. Yeah, dude, I started doing stand-up as a young, young boy. And I remember when my first stand-up was on a picnic table at a barbecue, and I was reciting Eddie Murphy Raw.
Oh,
yeah. And shoot, I must have been like 8 years old.
Wow.
And all the moms were like, who lets their kid talk like that? You know what I mean? and all the dads are just loving it. They think it's the funniest thing that ever happened. So, you know, I always wanted to be a stand-up. And I think that sometimes when I get bummed out about my career, I have to remember that I'm bummed out because I've been doing comedy since I was 8.
Yeah.
You know, and if I look at my career of when I actually really started doing stand-up, I've only been doing stand-up for 15 years, and I think I've accomplished quite a bit in that time.
Well, that's
you know?
A lot, 15 years.
Bro. Yeah, because, you know, it seems within the past, you know, 5 years, you've really took it up to a next step. You know what I mean? And
yeah, I remember hearing one time that, like, somebody said, like, after 7 years, you should be able to, you know, quit your job and make a living. After 10 years, you should start headlining. And then after 15 years is when you start getting things like TV and TV shows and movies and et cetera.
Yeah. See, that advice...
And I've come to believe that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just don't think that advice works for me because, you know...
I'm kind of behind the curve myself.
I think my Asperger's pushes me a few years away, you know?
Well, Rodney Dangerfield... Yeah, remember how long he was around, knocking around?
Yeah, but...
Yeah, no, Ronnie Dangerfield came back at 40, you know, and didn't get a career until he was in his 50s. And, but at the same time, I also think that, you know, 7 years doing stand-up, that's kind of a relative term because, you know, some guys don't have any job, but they work the comedy store door, and they do comedy... a lot more than the guy behind them. You know what I mean?
Correct.
So I think it's more about stage time and how much time you're able to get on stage and how much time and effort you're able to put into stand up. You know.
Well, see, that was another question I wanted to ask you because we talked to Jeff Richards a couple weeks ago about being a door guy at a comedy club, and you were a door guy at the Addison Comedy Club,
the Improv.
And
yeah, I started working the door there.
Yeah. Now. And honest opinion, because when you started doing that, you know, the stand-up game was different, you know. But now for a young comedian, do you think that's a good advice to get a job as a door guy at a comedy club?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, it's definitely a different game. But, you know, the idea of being a door guy is it allows you to be at the comedy club all the time.
Yeah, and you see greats.
You know, and you see great comics and you get to, and it's one of those deals when you work there, you know, the headliners and the guys that are coming through, they'll talk to you because you work there and they kind of have to. And when you're a door guy at the comedy store, you know, you're parking their cars. So you're talking to them directly or you're standing in the back and you're wearing that comedy store shirt. And that just gives them more reason to talk to you. And if they don't talk to you, you know, just being around it and kind of being a fly on the wall while other older guys are talking. I mean, I just think it's a huge, huge benefit to work the door. You know, when I worked the door in Addison, it was such an advantage for me because not only would I work the door, I would pick them up at the airport. I would also wake up early in the morning on Thursday and Friday to pick them.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, wow. That's cool. I didn't realize the door people.
I didn't think you went that far.
Yeah. Do all door people pick up people?
Not necessarily.
I would say some, not all, but I made sure that I did. You know, I would tell the manager, I'll do it. I'll be there.
That's a great idea.
You know,
because whenever I get off the plane, I do Uber.
Uber didn't exist then.
Yeah, that's true. But
you know, I also knew that these headliners were in town with no car, and I'd be like, "Hey, man, here's my number. Whatever you guys want to do, if you want to go, you know, downtown to see where JFK got shot, or if you want me to take you to a grocery store, to a restaurant, I'll be happy to do it." And maybe 9 times out of 10, they'd call me and go, "Hey, take me here, take me there." And you know, I met Dave Attell that way. I met Brian Regan that way. I met Mitch Hedberg that way. Ooh, so Mitch I was Hedberg. Able to. Become friends with these guys only because I worked there.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, we didn't mean to. You know, we just made, you made us really crack up just now.
You said we
both just cracked up here.
That's like a scary place to.
No, but it's part of, you know, people do want to see that. But yeah, it's funny how he said that. I laughed. We burst out laughing.
Yeah.
At Steve.
I've been there, but I mean, I remember when I went there, I was like, 5 or 6. I remember because the thing
is, did your dad take you there?
My biological dad did. Yeah, the thing is with Asperger's, like I was so fascinated with presidents, JFK was my favorite president, and he took me to the place where he got killed, and then I was just like, oh.
little trauma there, huh?
Yeah. I was like, way to ruin my hero.
Well,
but, you know, I'll tell you an interesting story. I don't know if you know who Tom Wilson is.
Yeah.
He's Biff from Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love it.
And he's such a great guy and such a great, a really funny performer. I mean, he's just an amazing performer, super talented. And the same thing, I asked him, I said, hey, man, I go, can I, you know, I'll give you a ride anywhere you need to go. Just call me. And he goes, no, I'll take the bus. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah. He's like, I like to take the bus all over towns. You know, any city I go to, I just take the bus. So, you know, the Dealey Plaza is probably, you know, a good 30 miles away from the comedy club. Yeah. And I see him that evening. He was like, dude, should have called you. Took forever on the bus.
Long ride to the plaza.
Tom Wilson's great.
But you know, fast forward years later and you know, me seeing him here and there and you know, us kind of getting, you know, being friends or whatever, I'm at the DFW airport and I'm flying to God knows where and I hear Trevino. And I turn around and it's Tom Wilson. And it was one of those surreal moments where I was like, never in a million years that I would think that Biff would call my name so I could talk to him.
Yeah. That's cool.
You know, and it was
cool.
It was just one of those really cool moments, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, especially because, like, he, you know, he's always been big at stand-up, but that was when he was probably, you know, really, really popular. You know? Like, he's still popular, but that was when a lot of people knew of him. Does that make sense? I don't want to insult Tom on my show. I'm not trying to.
Well, no, I mean, you know, he's one of those guys that everywhere he goes, people are like, Biff.
Yeah.
Biff. Because it was such a famous movie,
sure.
You know what I mean?
That's like a classic.
Well, yeah, because, like, when I do shows with Norm, you know, only Saturday Night Live people know who he is. You know, everyone else knows him as a stand-up.
Oh.
You know, yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. And I personally know Tom as a stand-up.
Yeah.
Like,
well, Steve is saying that thing about Tom Wilson and Biff. They say, Biff, and they not with Norm. They don't say, Saturday Night Live, Norm.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, you know.
Well, and it's, you know, it's interesting because, you know, Larry the Cable Guy, his real name is Dan Whitney. And he was doing stand-up as Dan Whitney for years. And then one of his stand-up buddies gets a radio show. And Dan Whitney would call in and redneck it up. And one day they go, somebody calls in and they go, who is that guy? And the radio DJ on a whim goes, oh, that's our buddy Larry. He's the cable guy here.
Oh, God, that's great. Wow, talk about.
That's a good way to come up with a good name. And it worked for him, too.
So every time they would call, they'd be like, hey, we're checking in with Larry, our cable guy. So then what happened was the radio show got really popular, and he would go out to perform as Dan Whitney, and people would boo him because they wanted to see Larry the Cable Guy. So finally, Dan Whitney was like, well, screw it. I'll just be Larry the Cable Guy. And that's how he became Larry the Cable Guy.
That's a cool story. I like that.
Now, Steve, I wanted to ask you something. It says you were a writer on Mind of Mencia.
Yes.
I know nothing about that show because I don't really know a lot about Carlos Mencia, and it's weird because I'm a stand-up. But the thing I do know about is writing, because I want to be a writer. Now, any tips for people who want to do writing? Like, was that a sitcom or was that?
Mind of Mencia.
It was like a sketch comedy show. Mm-hmm. You know, I was touring with Mencia when he was in the process of getting that show, and I was already, I mean, he was already doing all my material anyway, so, he asked me to be a writer, and initially I was going to be more of a performer than a writer, so, but Mencia wasn't having it, so I ended up being a writer, and I couldn't tell you how to become a writer or how to get on a show. I only got on the show because I was already touring with Mencia, but I'll tell you this, man, I learned a lot, and I realized that being a writer is the way to be. I mean, it's really sad that, like, okay, let's say a TV show airs, like a pilot airs, and it doesn't do well, and that pilot goes away, right?
Yeah.
Well, those actors are the ones that get blamed, which is interesting to me. So a lot of those actors are comedians that have shows and they don't work. They don't get to go on and work another show.
That's true.
But the same writers
go on
that made that show fail, they just keep working.
Wow.
Yeah. And
that's amazing to me. It's like, how come nobody goes, wait a minute, maybe the writer stunk. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's interesting.
No, I totally agree with that because I watch a lot of sitcoms. And the thing is, like, I don't know, Steve, are you familiar with a stand-up named Drake Sather?
No, I'm not.
Drake Sather was a stand-up comedian. He was on the 13th Young Comedian special in 87. He was hysterical. He had, you know, dark jokes. Like, one of his most famous jokes was, I cut myself shaving and I cut my Adam's apple and I got apple juice everywhere. And
oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. And he was a great comic, but he was never huge, you know, he was known as a writer. So he'd write material for Spade or Dennis mm-hmm. Miller. And then he wrote News Radio. And News Radio was a huge hit. And then, then when it got canceled, he moved on to something called a remake of Ed. Ed was bombed, you know, horribly. And he got blamed because he was rewriting it. And then he wrote Zoolander and then he killed himself. And that's what...
You know what? You mean he ended it all?
Yeah, he
after Zoolander?
Yeah.
Wow.
He killed himself. And that's the thing with writers is, like, they don't get blamed for the failures, but it seems like when they move on to a next project, if that project doesn't work, then it'll start going on to them. You know what I mean? And with actors...
Right.
The three strikes and you're out, is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying. And with actors...
Well, the third strike for him was a big one.
Yeah, and with actors, you get one strike, hit or miss. If it's a hit, you get another strike. You know? And
Writers, well, it's all relative. And I learned that, you know, these... You know, a lot of these TV shows are being written by these, you know, these Harvard grads that become, you know, I mean, I've been paired up with writers to write my sitcom. You know, my last experience was with these two guys, Seth and Danny, and they were like really yuppie Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I mean, really Hollywood kids and kind of Harvard writers. And dude, me and them didn't see eye to eye at all. You know,
and
here I am stuck with these writers that have no idea where I come from and who I am and my sense of humor, you know, and I'm stuck with them, you know.
Wow.
Now, is that what, because I mean, I know you were writing a sitcom. I mean, what's the progress? Is that still in the air or is that why it's staying closed doors right now with the
writers? We fought like crazy, like cats and dogs, and we just couldn't get along. And in my opinion, we turned in a really, really crummy script that didn't represent who I was and my stand-up. But at the moment, I now have a writer that I'm really proud to work with, and you know, I'm working with David Himmelfarb, who you know, and David's an amazing producer, and I think now we're on the right page. So we're in the process of writing my new pilot, so we'll see. You know, I feel like this time will be well represented.
Yeah, and the thing is because, like, I want a sitcom, but when I get a sitcom, I want writers. And that's the thing. I think writers make the sitcom good because you don't really have to be an actor to have a sitcom. And that's the thing that people don't understand.
But you don't want Harvard yuppies, as Steve said. Like, if you get Seth, what if you get Seth?
I'd tell Seth, I'd be like, bye. You know, like,
it's not that easy, but I mean, you know, that's the goal, is to find somebody that gets your voice,
that understands
the jokes that you want to tell and the story that you want to tell, and that's the thing. When it's a collaboration, they have to understand who you are, you know, and if they don't, and you know, like these guys that I was working with, they wanted to do what they wanted to do. Yeah. They wanted to write their show, and it's like, well, wait a minute, we're writing my show.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, because, like, if you notice, a lot of the shows that are really successful, the writers have a connection with the star. For example, okay, Rules of Engagement, David Spade was the star of that show.
And
okay?
The writers.
Right.
Okay, the writer who created it, his name was Tom Hertz. He used to be a stand-up. And I know all this about the show because my uncle was one of the stars on the show. And Tom was a great stand-up, but he used to write with David Spade.
Mm-hmm.
So all of David Spade's material came from that connection.
Because he had a familiarity, like Steve said.
And it was a hit. Mm-hmm. It was a hit TV show. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think, you know, like on your TV show, you know, like Jesus, you know, get him in as a writer because he knows you. He knows your stand-up. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? Like, he could help you.
Absolutely. Well, that's the thing, too. The writer that I'm paired up with now used to write on Kids in the Hall and Mad TV and The Tonight Show. So, and he's an ex-stand-up.
Yeah.
So when me and him work, we work like a couple of stand-ups, you know?
Sure.
And when you're working with these writers who, you know, they're just, I mean, don't get me wrong, there's probably writers out there that went to Harvard and are very Hollywood that are amazing writers, of course, right? But it just didn't work for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But see, Steve,
so it is a matter of pairing up with that right person and for me, you know, this guy that I'm working with is an ex stand up and he gets the stand up world. You know?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. And like, I've hung out with you a few times, Steve, you know, I've opened for you a few times. And like, whenever I do, I just say, you know what, Steve's going to have his own sitcom. So, you know, like I could see that. I could see something going around, you know what I mean? So I know just because your bad experience with the writers didn't work, I know it's a blessing in disguise because you're going to get that hit TV show.
Well, I mean, I hope so. And I appreciate that, Keith, but you also have to understand that I'm Mexican American and I don't fit what they want to hear. And that's one of the obstacles that I'm really having to overcome is to explain to these networks that yes, I'm Mexican American, but, you know, my race is not the punchline.
Yeah.
And these networks, they just want to keep buying these shows that continue to play that Latino stereotype over and over.
Yeah.
And they don't understand that the comedy that I'm doing represents Latinos in a different way. They just can't see it. So that's another obstacle, you know?
And it's universal. You know, your humor is universal. It doesn't have to be tagged like that and, you know, can still come from who you are.
Well,
you get it. I get it. Keith gets it. You know, but these executives, they look at my scripts and they look at my act and they go, how do we sell this?
Yeah. The suits.
You know, he's not giving us the Mexican, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you know what the coolest thing about podcasts is whatever you say, it'll be on record forever. So Steve,
what are you going to say?
No, I'm going to say something from the heart and I'm going to mean it. All and right. You know,
I'm right here.
If it ever happens, you know, you could just say, hey, play this podcast. And I'll be like, oh yeah, I said that. Steve, I promise you, if I ever get a sitcom of my show, you'll be the star on it too. I promise you.
Well, I appreciate that, man.
And we'll write it just how you want your character to be.
Well, and that's the thing about stand up, you know. And when I go to, and I wish I had started my stand up career in New York. I mean, the way that New York comics help each other, the way that New York comics look out for each other, the way that the New York comedy scene is just so much different than Los Angeles.
And, you know, Steve, I want you to go on about that because it's funny. You just picked my brain because
that's,
you know,
true. That's why I'm so in love with Norm because he takes care of comics. You know?
Yeah, he's
Los
making
Angeles
a great point.
Guys don't.
I want Steve. Would you go ahead and talk about that just a touch more? New York.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, when you look at these New York comics, you know, they put people on stage because they're good, because they're good stand-ups, and Hollywood doesn't do that. Hollywood puts up comics because they're on a TV show because they're the hot new comic, you know, and New York, they don't care about that. They don't care if you're on a TV show or not. They care if you're good, you get to go on stage.
Truth.
If you're not good and you're on a TV show, we don't care. We're not going to let you on our stage because you're on a TV show. You're going to be on our stage because you're a good stand-up comedian. And I think, you know, you see those guys that are out there that are edgy, that have something to say, that have opinions. And LA's, you know, you go look at some of these LA comics who are on the lineups at the big clubs in town, and you go, really? Like, who cares?
I agree with that because, like, you know, I'm 28. I'm still, you know, I mean, I've hit my 10-year mark in stand-up, but I'm still I'm still past opening. Like, I just got, you know, featuring. I'm not headlining or whatever.
Sure.
But I go to the Hollywood Improv, for example. I'll give you an example. Hollywood Improv, I can't get into. I just can't. No matter how I try, I send my clips, I send my availabilities, I do the open mic.
Yeah.
I ask headliners if I could open up. They just won't take me in. But then I look at it and I see that they're putting on guys who have a TV credit.
Yeah, sure, that's weird.
And it's like your TV credit is you were on MTV for 1 second.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, do I have to lie about credits? Because I'm not going to do that. I don't have any, you know, I don't have a huge fan base. How do I get a fan base? I perform with people.
Right.
And see, that's...
Well, what's even more frustrating is when somebody gets on a TV show and their agent goes, you know what you should do? You should do stand-up.
Exactly. Exactly.
And then they go, yeah, I should do that. And then their agent goes, I'll call the Hollywood Improv or the Comedy Store or the Laugh Factory, and I'll get you spots. And then they go, oh, well, they're on a TV show. Sure, let them do spots. And it's like, oh, now we have to deal with these guys, you know?
Yeah, and see, that's sad because, like, I got passed by the Laugh Factory, you know, so that was cool. But I still haven't got passed by Hollywood Improv. I've only performed at Hollywood Improv once, and Richard Villa gave me that spot, and he fought hard for that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Richard's a good guy.
Yeah, and the Comedy Store I just can't get into, even though I'm really good friends with Adam Egit.
Well, it's just a matter of time, you know.
Yeah, but Steve, that was another question I had. Is like, if you want to do the. See, working the door at a Comedy Store compared to working the door at an improv, it's two different beasts because the Comedy Store has three rooms, sometimes three shows a night. The improv has one room, sometimes two shows a night. You know what I mean? So,
it's tough. And you know what? Being a Comedy Store door guy isn't what it used to be. I mean, and even speaking of Adam Egit, you know, Adam has really done an amazing job of. Yeah, and not just Adam, but the management at the Comedy Store, they've done an amazing job of making the Comedy Store the coolest place in town.
Yeah, I mean, they have.
You know, that place is jam-packed all the time, and every celebrity in town wants to perform there. And that's partially because of Adam, but at the same time, Adam is forgetting the idea of the door guy.
No.
You know, Mitzi Shore had a system where if you were a door guy at the Comedy Store, you're important.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a door guy at the Comedy Store because we think you're important and we think that you might have a career.
See, that's a good deal there.
Yeah.
That's not the same.
And those door guys used to get stage time. Mm-hmm. And those door guys used to be a big part of the Comedy Store. And now because there's so many celebrities going on stage there, there's just no room. I mean,
they've taken the stage.
I'm a national headliner with a Showtime special and a Netflix special, and I don't get good spots there because the lineup is David Spade and Norm Macdonald and Joe Rogan and Bill Burr and Daniel Tosh and Chris D'Elia and all of these stars that Adam's been able to bring in. So what happens is because all these stars are there, then the door guys get forgotten about, and guys like me who are road dogs, we start getting forgotten about. And to me, as great as that is, that's a dangerous place to be. Because in 5 years, those road dogs become Bill Burr, become Louis C.K., become Joe Rogan.
I totally agree.
Yes, indeed.
And those door guys become Chris D'Elia and, you know, Steve Renazzisi and these TV stars. And Adam wasn't able to get them up. And they go, you know what? Screw this place. We'll go somewhere else.
I agree.
But it's a game that Adam has to figure out, and I don't think that Adam's doing it on purpose, and I don't think that Adam's a bad guy. I just think that that's where he's at right now, and it's scary.
Oh,
it could be dangerous.
Oh no, Adam is not a bad guy at all. He's the sweetest guy in the world. But when
I'm not sitting here bashing Adam.
No,
I'm just saying
he has a tough
job.
We gotta get that on the record, though. So, like, in 5 years when he listens to it, Adam, we love you. But
no, he's turned it around. He's made it sexy.
We had Tommy on this podcast in season one, and
that was fun. That was crazy.
He's a little nuts, you know. And Tommy never passed anybody unless you had something to give him. Does that make sense? So, like, I think Tommy didn't really know about stand-up. And see, Adam used to work at the Improv in Phoenix, so Adam knows a lot about stand-up. And I think,
well, I mean, you know, you have to be careful with that statement because you get all these guys like, you know, and look, I love Adam, you know, but, you know, him and Tommy were good. We're good for the Comedy Store in certain ways, and I think they're bad for the Comedy Store in certain ways, but it's going to be that way. There's not going to be anybody that books the Comedy Store that's going to be perfect. You know
oh,
what
yeah.
I mean?
I agree.
The good thing about Tommy, he tried his best to keep it the way Mitzi ran it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what he
you know,
told us.
If you weren't passed at the Comedy Store, you don't get to go up. And you don't get to call in your avails. For example, for years, you know, Dane Cook wasn't passed there, so Tommy wouldn't let him up.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
You know, and Sarah Silverman, Ron White. I mean, all these big names, and Tommy would go, I'm sorry, they're not passed.
Well, Ron White just got into the Comedy Store a couple months ago, didn't he?
Well, see, and that's the thing that Adam's bringing back is Adam's kind of like, look, you should have been passed. You're a huge name. We'll take you.
Yeah, but Jay Moore can't, or John Lovitz can't even get in. So you know.
So like I said, it's a very difficult position to be in.
Yeah.
And Adam has a huge job, and people don't understand how hard his job is. Yeah. But you know, in my opinion, and this is just my opinion, I think Adam needs to think about taking care of some of those door guys, taking care of some of those road dogs, and some of those legends that have been around forever because, you know, they're a big part of the Comedy Store as well, you know?
What do you think of the roast battle? Do you have fun judging those?
Oh, dude, I think those are fun. Those are great. I mean, I think that roast battle is where we all started. I mean, you know, it's very true to our roots. I mean, you know, when we were all growing up and in the parking lot in the schoolyard and everybody was making fun of each other. I mean, that was some of the first places that I performed. I remember, you know, me and my buddies bagging on each other and gathering a little crowd at recess and everybody going, oh, Trevino. And, you know, and I was good at it. You know,
it's,
that's why I enjoy watching these young guys go at it at the comedy battle. And there's a really good energy in there, and it's a lot of fun. I just don't think it'll ever be a TV show.
Yeah,
it's funny because the roasts in the past have stood alone. You know, with the classic insult comics like Don Rickles, for example.
Jack Carter.
Thank you,
Steve. Have you ever done a roast battle against a comic, or do you just judge it? Like, do you ever when you're judging, think, oh, that'd be fun just to roast somebody? You're
no,
a headliner now.
You
so
know.
You don't.
Yeah, no, even if I'm, you know, I used to be, and now I'm not the type to, I don't enjoy making fun of somebody.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I get that.
If the three of us were in a car and we're doing a gig together in my car, sure, let's have some fun, let's make fun of each other. But in public, making fun of somebody, it just makes me uncomfortable, and it makes me feel
uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. You know, and I used to be a bully in high school, and I've grown out of that, and it just brings me back to, it's kind of bullyish to me.
Yeah.
Even though I enjoy it and I love watching people go at it, you know, but me personally, I don't think I'd want to do it. I mean, it just doesn't suit me.
Yeah.
And not because I'm a headliner, I'm above it or anything. It's just the way it makes me feel.
Sure.
If there was a tight-knit group in the parking lot and we were all sitting there making fun of each other, sure.
Yeah.
But that is an insult comic type of style. It's a Steve, you know.
Well, I didn't mean Steve it like that. What I meant it was because I've done it three times. I'm 2-1. Woohoo! Not meaning to brag. But
you did.
But But the guy who runs it, he always says, hey, who do you want to roast now? And I don't want to choose. I don't roast because I'm not a roast. You know, I don't like that humor and stuff. People challenge me. And then I said, oh, just to be funny, but I was kind of serious. Yeah. I was like, oh, I want to roast Jeff Ross. And they're like, what, are you crazy? Why not? You might as well just roast the best. And even if you lose, you know, you could say, hey, I roasted
That's like getting in the ring with Muhammad Ali.
Question was, because I wanted to see if you wanted to roast me in the future, Steve.
Oh, but that's very clever.
One of the advantages, I don't know if you know Jesus Trejo. I know you do, Keith.
Yeah.
Jesus Trejo, a lot of people don't realize that one of the reasons that he wins a lot, yes, he's witty, yes, he's funny, yes, he's talented, but he's also the underdog.
Hmm. Yeah,
and he wins a lot because you root for the underdog, And
good point.
And when you're a headliner competing against, I'm using you, Keith, as an example. But if I were to roast with you, they can't wait for you to win.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a very good point.
You know what I mean? I'm already at a disadvantage that here I come. An established comedian going after a feature act on top of that has autism. Are you freaking kidding me? you know what I mean?
Dude, you just cracked yourself. I'm sorry.
But no, it's funny that you say that, because every comedian who roasts me, they don't have any real good things to say. They just attack my autism, and it's like I kind of expect it,
They go after that, blood. They go for the throat.
Which, to be honest with you, if we did roast, I would never go after.
See, Steve
your
is a nice. See, Steve, yes. That's not. That's Steve.
Well,
is
I
nice.
Appreciate that.
Steve's a nice guy. I'm sorry.
Well, it's not that I'm nice. I just know people, and I know that people will be really sensitive to the fact that me going after your autism, they'd be like, "Whoa, guy, not cool." You know what I mean?
Sure.
No matter how funny it was.
Yeah, it's a little harsh.
Well, you know what's weird is a lot of great stand-ups have autism. Or had autism, like Robin Williams, for example. He never.
Robin Williams and Tom Arnold
Tom Arnold.
I opened up for Tom Arnold, and this was a
Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'll tell the Tom Arnold story later. But the thing is, they have autism and Asperger's and stuff, and that's the thing. But they're not known for that, And Robin Williams never, really talked about it. Tom Arnold talks about it a little in his act, but Dan Aykroyd, even when he did stand-up, he didn't know he had autism.
I never knew.
He talks.
Yeah, he found out years later. I heard him on a Stern interview talk about that, and he said, it's never stopped me from doing anything. He goes, but I did find out later on that I did have it. Yeah.
And see, that's the thing. When you have, because I have Asperger's, which is a form of autism, but it's hard being a stand-up comedian with Asperger's because, one, to be a stand-up comedian, you have to be funny. To be funny, you have to hear laughs. I don't hear laughs. I'm so dizzy by noise and light, I don't know if I'm funny or not. So, whenever I do a show, whoever's headlining...
Well, let me help you. You're not.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'm kidding.
No, but... But whenever, after a show, I'll always ask the headliner, "Hey, did I do good and stuff?" Yeah, and they get sick of it. And I was like, I just want to know,
they don't realize.
I even asked you after the improv. I was like, "Hey, did I do?" You know what I mean? Because
sure, no, and it's having autism is like being Mexican.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to put you on the Mexican show. You know what I mean?
That's true.
Sure.
And see,
Everybody wants to bring it up. I can't tell you how many times I walked into a morning show to do morning press and they play freaking Mexican music as I walk in. And I'm like, really?
That's
I'm more than that.
Unbelievable.
I get that too. Because on my sitcom that I want to talk about autism, but I don't want it to be known as the autism show.
Sure.
That's not the punchline.
Yeah.
But
that it has to be around it, but I totally get what you mean about sitcoms not giving a fair chance to Latinos and stuff for that reason, so.
Oh, they'll give me a sitcom as long as I beaner it up, and I'm not willing to do that.
Yeah. So.
It's like if somebody went up to you and said, "Listen, we're going to do a show. It's all about autism." Sure. I'm more than that.
Yeah, I'll say that, I'll only do it if there's a part with Steve Trevino.
That's awesome.
Clever.
I made a word here. But no, I seriously, if that ever does happen, you have my word. I'll honor that.
There you go.
Well, I appreciate that, man. And let me tell you, dude, it's a long road, and it's a fun road, and it's a difficult road. And, you know, there's times where I look at my career, and it's funny because, the feeling of being the new guy, mm-hmm. it never goes away.
Oh, yeah. And especially when you've been doing it for a long time, and then, like, I don't know about you, but I get really jealous when a comic who hasn't been doing it as long as I gets more opportunities. I'm like, really?
Well, there's no fairness.
That's one of the obstacles that you have to overcome. And there comes a point where, you know, you have to get to where I'm at now, where I don't really care about anybody else.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I know that they know that I'm a damn good comedian.
And you are.
And you definitely are.
Yeah. And you're going to get a sitcom.
And that's a good point he's making to everybody about that. That's life. It's not fair, and you have to stay focused on who you are.
Well, see, that's what makes Steve such a great comic, because he's showing that. You know, he's sticking to the stand-up roots, and he's selling out shows, you know.
Well, that's how his Texans are.
Yeah, right, but Steve? He's doing it based on his stand-up.
No, I know.
Because he believes I've had
many, you know, people, door guys at the Comedy Store, they come up to me and they go, Steve, I want your career. And I go, wait a minute, you don't want my career. You want Chris D'Elia's career or Steven Zissou's career. And they go, no. They go, oh, we want your career. And I say, why? And they go, because you have integrity.
Because
Steve, you do things on your terms, the way you want to do them, and you make a living doing stand-up comedy without worrying about, and not that D'Elia or Rena Zissou don't have integrity. I'm just saying that these are things that they've said to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a great compliment.
And they see integrity in what I do, and they see that I do things on my terms, and I do them my way. And I was raised, my daddy's one of our mottos as a Trevino, my dad used to say, we're Trevinos, we don't kiss ass, we kick ass.
Excellent.
Well, Steve, I hate to cut this short, but the director just said that our time is up.
Thank you
so much for the interview. Is there a Twitter that people could follow you on?
At Mr. Steve Trevino. My fan page is Steve Trevino. My Facebook is Steve Trevino. And my Instagram is Texas Trevino. If anybody wants to continue this conversation and ask me a question or send me whatever, I'm always willing to have a conversation. I really appreciate you guys, and hopefully I get to come back.
Oh, thank you so much for doing it, buddy. I really appreciate it. We tried to get you last season, so it was good that we got you tonight.
Keep me posted, fellas. Thank you so much.
All right, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Have a good night, buddy.
Good night.
Bye. Take care. Good night. That's a good guy.
Oh, nobody's funnier than Steve, man.
I love the way he was giving, all that knowledge. And I'll tell you, it reminded me of, Norm when he gave us all that information there in San Diego.
Yeah, we'll talk about that on a different trip, but the director is waving his hands.
Oh, my.
So, Alan Lee.
Yes.
Anything coming up this week?
Well, I'm going to be in town.
All right. Sweet. Next week, I can't announce who the guest is because it's a big celebrity guest.
Okay.
And
it's going to be a surprise.
And you can't announce it in case their schedule.
Yeah.
But tune in people, next week.
Please do.
I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that it's still committed and he doesn't have anything else going on. Thank you guys so much. I'm Keith Reza. Follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Until then, God bless and adios, amigos.
Good night.
You're listening to Reza Riffs with Keith Reza and Alan Lee right here on LA Talk Radio.